find out what it's like to experience the world from above. Fly your own drone today. DroneCloneExperts.com specializes in high-quality, affordable drones. Now introducing their Limitless 2 model, equipped with a 4K camera for stunning Ultra HD clarity, GPS with precision auto return, and up to 25 minutes flight time on a single charge. Visit DroneCloneExperts.com now and enter promo code RADIO to receive 15% off your entire order. That's DroneCloneExperts.com.
Hey, this is Josh.
This is Chico of the Black Moods.
And you're listening to us on Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Microphone over. Hello, everybody. How are you? Welcome back. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Welcome to Verbal Shenanigans, the podcast that just keeps on giving without you asking. I am Scott. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing all right, Scotty. Hoping my fly boys are going to get me another win so they can go to the next round, but they're starting sluggish tonight.
That's good. That's actually good news. But, Mike, actually, hello, everyone. If you're tuning into the show, this is Verbal Shenanigans. I'm Scott. That's Mike. We are a weekly program. We've been putting out two a week for quite a while now. We'll call it our summer hours, Mike, our summer hour. We've been open up. For more business, if you will, than normal. I've been cranking out two episodes a week since March, basically. And it's been a hell of a ride.
Yeah, it makes you wonder when the new money's going to come in for this second episode.
Yeah.
It's been a few months. I've been at the post office constantly. I mean, they're limited staff. I'm guessing that's why.
Right.
I haven't received all my second show checks.
Yeah. The royalties that have been promised to you that are coming your way for all the reuse of our episodes and the playback and whatnot. But we are a weekly program. We're just coming off a really cool interview, if you're just tuning in now, with Byron Belasco, of the creator of the show Kingdom. And it was pretty well received. So if you have never heard of that show, go check out that episode, which was on Monday. And go check that one out. But what's up?
I was just about to say, you were talking, going back to royalties. I couldn't believe this. I was watching a video. I can't for the life of me figure out, like...
For the life of me, I cannot remember.
Don't do that, because the reason I brought this up was apparently there was an episode of The Office where Michael Scott was... his girlfriend broke up with him, whatever, and he was going to do a vacation.
Uh-huh.
And, like, one of the cutaways to, like, the camera view, he sung, like, literally a line and a quarter of Two Tickets to Paradise.
Right. Eddie Money.
Yeah. Apparently that cost NBC $60,000.
No. Just to sing the music, lyrics?
Without the music in the background, it was just... like him, I got two tickets to heaven. Like, he wasn't even like really saying the words, and he missed out some. But apparently, I guess it's enough where they had to put a claim against them, and they had to pay $60,000 since, like, for all the usage, you will go into like syndication and all that.
What am I doing wrong? I forget this podcasting crap. I need one major mega hit that will be played, one Baha Men like Who Let the Dogs Out song that could just pay me when, like, they just use me in pop culture, I get picked up in commercials, just royalties spilling in.
Well, I mean, we always end with life is funny, laugh at it. Somebody's had to say life is funny where we can say that's enough, give us money.
That's true. That's true. Remember, years back, I did find someone trying to start a Verbal Shenanigans podcast, and I immediately was like, oh, no. Oh, no. And I looked at them. They had like two episodes. I'm like, we have like, at that time, it was like, I don't know. 90 episodes, yeah, something like that.
Yeah,
and I was like, please, I made it like all official sounding, like, please,
cease and desist,
yeah, desist from using the name in the future, blah 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 blah. Meanwhile, they probably would have took our name over real quick.
That show eventually changed its name to the Joe Rogan Podcast.
Yeah, that's the Monday Morning Podcast with Bill Burr. Yeah,
they're like burning $100 bills, just laughing at the fact that you sent your email from your Gmail account, thinking we're all legal and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We are very legal, by the way, very legal. So don't try to take our name, because we will come after you with teams of lawyers.
Yeah, are you sure they're serious? They got to be serious. They use the Yahoo account. I don't want to deal with that.
Yeah,
clearly the lawyers know, like, they're hiding information by using the Yahoo account, so I'm treading lightly with that.
Yeah, but yeah, so welcome back to the show. Mike, I don't know if you saw, it's just it's funny because I think it was last week on the episode I promoted, we were in our little things to promote before we go section, I promoted Soul Joel, his comedy festival he was doing down in Royersford, Pennsylvania, I think it is. And he was doing this really cool festival where it was a big headline. Jim Brewer was down there the other night, Dave Attell. I don't know if you saw, but the other night, Big J Okerson, very funny comic, pretty well-known name from Legion of Skanks and whatnot, was performing. And apparently, during this time, during the show, there was like a heckler, pretty bad. Like a woman, and apparently her father was like a big Jay Okerson fan, but like they were all drunk, you know, typical hecklers, heckling. And apparently, during the show, like Jay Okerson is a very big, he's like a master of crowd work kind of comic. Like he actually put out a crowd work, CD and special, like just him crowd working. Like, yeah. And so he had you know, at a setup, like they asked him, do you want us to get rid of these people? And he said, no, I'll work them into the act and whatnot. And then eventually he was like giving them a symbol, like get them out of here or whatever. So apparently what happened was, as he was, you know, going through his act, the woman would not just shut up. Like she was just yelling things. And then her brother apparently was just like, you know, typical drunk, like ruin the show for everyone type of people.
Somebody who literally thinks I'm funnier than the comedian, people are loving me interrupting him.
Yeah, yeah. I paid, so I have the right to just yell whatever I want, not the comic that the other couple hundred people are trying to watch. You know?
The comedian is loving it, apparently, because he acknowledged me at one point, so let me keep going with this.
You know, I've had people say that to me. They're like, oh, where are you? You know, I see you're at the, whatever. I see you're in Bloomfield this week. They're like, oh, I might come. I'm going to heckle you, though. I'm like, ew. Like, I said, no, please don't come, first off. Second off, like, I hate that some people in their mind think that that's like a rite of passage, like you're allowed to do that. You buy a ticket. There are people that go just to do that.
Yeah, there are people who literally just tank up and they're like all through the night, like eating dinner, drinking. Oh, when this guy comes up, I'm gonna blah 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 blah. That'll be awesome. High five.
Yeah. And if you've been to a comedy show with a bad heckler, it literally ruins it for everyone. It just ruins because it's an art form that needs silence and it needs the audience to listen. It's not like some drunk guy at a concert yelling, play Piano Man, you know. It's not that's fine, you can deal with that. Once the music goes on, you can't even hear him anymore. The worst two times I was heckled was once at a beefsteak, where some guy literally, he had the first seat and would just stand up right in front of me and just like start talking to the back of the room and like trying to get them, and everyone's like, sit down. And I think I mentioned this, they were drinking since 5 o'clock and the show was at 9. They had
professional heckler.
Yeah, open bar. Open bar for 4 hours before a comedy show. Not a good idea.
Not good math right there.
The worst I ever got heckled and the worst I ever bombed because of heckling was two like 80-year-old women down at the station, Mike Bonner's room. Free comedy, like every Friday night. He's done it for like, I don't know, a couple hundred weekends in a row or whatever until this happened. And these two ladies, every time I went to go for like a setup or something, they'd be like, oh yeah, tell me a story about it. Or say like something dumb like, oh yeah, I bet he, you know, like I bet she didn't care. Like laughing to themselves. And I was fairly new in the game, probably 2 years in, a year and a half in. And I did not know how, I didn't have the tools to kind of shut them down. I didn't have the confidence to just go over them and at least get through the set. It just froze me dead. Like, poof, like cold sweats, like a lot of, And trying to laugh at the ladies and trying to like actually like encouraging them. Awful. Like, I still remember this like to a T, and it was like, you know, it was kind of like an hour and 10 minute drive, and I just remember that drive home being so miserable because I think I got out like one joke the entire time and bombed for like probably it was a 10 minute set, probably bombed for 9 minutes straight of it.
I just like how you spent an hour and 10 minutes thinking about two 80-year-old women, like.
Well, we talked a couple weeks ago how like you eventually learn that like it's okay. It's just some show in a side room of a bar. Like it's not a big deal. But early on, you remember you had a bad set. It was devastating.
Oh yeah, you were thinking, especially if like it was like on a Sunday or whatever, some like late night one, and like you literally went Monday through Friday. Or even worse, if you didn't have like a show that weekend, it's like, I don't know if I can do it, man. Once you bomb in a beefsteak, it's over.
Exactly.
There's no way coming back from that.
Exactly. You start going, what am I doing with myself? I don't want to do this anymore. Oh, shit. I got a gig coming up this weekend. Like, I'm going to bomb again. I have no confidence. I mean, it still happens, but you definitely learn to like shake those off over time and be like, eh, whatever. That crowd sucked. Like that old saying, like, oh, there's no crappy crowds. Oh, that is the worst logic ever. Because there are surely some really crappy crowds out there that I don't care if Dave Chappelle comes walking on, he's going to have a 4 out of 10 set, you know, like. There's crowds that just don't want to be there. There's crowds that are just obnoxious that don't want to listen. Like you can't be Houdini every night. It's almost impossible.
No, like those dinner shows or those bar shows, like where people didn't even know a comedy show was appearing.
Oh, that's the worst.
So like that, like when they're literally like, what the hell is this? It's like doomsday. I even kind of remember, like, when I was still doing comedy, I think it was the, I'm not sure if it wasn't the Bonner Room. It was some room down in South Jersey. Like, I went with Doug, and I wasn't on the event.
Uh-huh.
I just went down with him to...
Was it the other station in Garwood or Cranford or one of them? Rob Apple's room?
It wasn't Apple's. Oh, no, God, it was somewhere south. It was like right off of 130.
Okay.
It's somewhere in the Brunswick area, somewhere like that. It's past.
Oh, was it Kurt Zimmerman's room? That one room?
Zimmerman's room.
Yeah.
And so I went there with Doug Max. I was just there to kind of like hang out, do something on like a Saturday. And like one of the comics didn't show up, but also who was there was Tom Mangili. He was there, and like Kurt came up to us and he's like, well, you know, I got a spot for whomever. And Mangini, it was like near my
Mangeli weekend. Mangini, the Jets former coach.
Both similar size, but I remember it was somewhere near like my birthday weekend. And Tom basically said, well, it's almost your birthday, so I'll let you decide, you or me, going up there. And I just had, like, I looked around the room, and I was not feeling, and I deferred to him. And right. I think he was shocked I deferred.
Mm-hmm.
And thank God, because that was a Richard, if you will.
Yes.
Since we try to keep it PG around here, kind of night for all the comedians that night. So, and then I did his show the next month where he actually had a stage and a setup, and bam, it was also during the World Series. So that added to the, I do not care who you are, I'm here to watch baseball.
I had a very, very similar thing. It was one of Apple's rooms. It was also called The Station. I think it was Garwood. I don't know. Anyway, it was, they stuck comedy in the corner of the bar room, like the bar. So nice square bar. People are trying to get a drink after work, grab some grub. Same thing. World Series is on. And all of a sudden it's like, hey guys, there's a comedy show. And like, he goes on and he was walking around the bar with the wireless mic, like trying to, you know,
engage.
People. And I'm like, no way am I doing that. I can't, I do not have that in me, like to even approach someone who doesn't. I'd rather say my set to myself than try to engage someone who doesn't want to be there.
And from the sounds, you basically said your set to yourself that night.
Oh my God. Just flop sweat everywhere. Yeah. So I'm curious when this all ends. Like I do have a show or two that I think I'll be fine at. Like I already know like the setup's going to be okay. So I know like, and one I'm hosting and I'm confident enough in hosting where I could just kind of like get the show rolling if I'm bombing, you know, just kind of be like, all right, guys, you're ready for a good time. Just give this, just throw the next comic death on, you know, give them the death spot. But
yeah, well, it's kind of funny, like how you talk about like vision always see things. I kind of remember you and me went to that place, mm-hmm. like the opening night he did it. And I remember the crowd was like super into it. Like,
okay.
I don't know, for whatever reason, I don't know if it was advertisement, nothing going on, whatever. But I remember we went there and like the whole bar was into it. They were going nuts. They were hitting every comedian. Yeah. Sitting back saying, man, I got to work my way to get a spot here and all. I think maybe like 2 months later, you're like, yeah. You know,
the funniest spot about that room is that they had a side room too, like in the back. That would have been perfect for, hey, I'll take 3 attentive people over 30 unattentive people who don't want to be there any day of the week. I will tell my jokes to 3 people and just kind of be like, that sucked, and get off the stage. Then just try to ruin someone's night on telling them some dumb story I have.
Kind of like our ghost comedy night over at that Vapor Room.
What are you talking about, bro? You headlined that show.
I didn't. I was technically going to. I think, if I recall, I was supposed to, but basically only 2 people showed up.
Yep.
Both were brought by 1 comedian.
Yep.
So by rule, that comedian became the headliner. And I remember that was like the one time.
Oh my God. I remember us being at my house like, oh my God, this is going to be terrible. Oh my God. Like, oh my. And you had like probably 10 minutes at that time. And you were like, I think I got to do 30 minutes. What am I going to do? I was like, I don't know, man. Like, let's just go do it.
And I even remember like, it was just like, we're like, it's going to be canceled. Nobody's here. It's going to be canceled. Nobody's here. And then like, who was it? Who was the Hebrew Billy? Buddy Holly. What's his name?
Larry Goldberg.
There you go. It's like, Larry's coming. He's bringing 2 people. So like, I got 10 minutes. And I think that was the one time I can honestly say I was smart enough to say, I don't give a crap about this, where I was so loose. It actually kind of worked.
I think it worked.
I remember I just grabbed a chair and I sat down in front of the 2 people and I just chatted with them. I didn't give a crap. I don't.
Yep. I think John Sweeney brought like 2 people too, or something like that. But yeah, well, now she's dead. So, or supposedly dead. But anyway. So, continuing back to my story. The woman was yelling or whatever. And apparently he like gave the sign to the club owner, like, all right, she's got to go now. You know, like there's no chance of me. And if Jay Oakerson can't get out of it, he, like I said, master crowd work, like master level crowd work, can kind of get everyone laughing. Apparently she was starting to cry and like whole crowd was starting to laugh at her. Just chaos. So she starts to get escorted out of the show. And her brother charges the stage and knocks him clear off the stage, and a brawl ensues. Like, mm-hmm. like he defended her honor or something like that. Now, and this stage, if you look at the pic, there's a video out there, is not low. This is probably, I'm going to say 4 feet off the ground. And Jay Oakerson's kind of a big guy, like a big, sturdy, stocky guy. Like he could have literally, you know, this is like jumping into a shallow pool, you know, like yeah. he could have literally broke his neck or whatever. Got tackled off the stage, and another comic, Louis J. Gomez, who's kind of like a tough guy, comic, comes out and starts brawling with him. And this is why, I don't know, man, like outdoor comedy is hard already, and now you're like getting people who are possibly in a, you know, there's something about being in a room where you're a little bit more like, okay, I'm here for the show. And like these walls kind of, yeah. I don't know what I'm trying to say. Like they kind of, there's a way to behave. I think when people are outside, it's like whatever goes, man. Like, and we're talking about people who are offended so much to knock the performer off the stage.
Dan, he snuck attack him, didn't he? He got him from behind.
From behind, like right in the hip and like lower hip, and blew his legs out, like, and the stool and everything. And he was sitting on the stool because Jay Oakerson always sits on the, like he's a sitting kind of comic and just kind of works the crowd. I mean, that scares me, man. Like, not that like I'm like, oh, that's going to happen to me. Like nothing I say in my act is offensive at all. I think I have like one borderline joke that's like, ooh, you know?
Yeah.
But this is the state where we're at, man. We're at where people can't take a joke. And now we're cramming comedy into, you know, spaces and maybe audiences that aren't used to it or aren't ready for it. I don't know if real comedy is ever coming back anytime soon, like at least a year and a half away.
I feel it might kind of die down. I almost feel like we're going to go back to like a Lenny Bruce thing where we're going to get some kind of pioneer who's going to be like, you know what? I'm going up there. You're going to hate me. You're going to try to cancel me. I'm going to keep coming back.
Yeah.
And we're going to rebuild off that.
His name is Dave Chappelle. There's one. You see he's doing like, he basically has like a park with a gazebo where he filmed that one
839, was it called?
Or? Yeah, it was brilliant. Either way, but he's just like doing shows there. Like he's just doing Dave Chappelle sets and having a couple comics open for him. You know who can do that? Dave Chappelle can do that.
Pretty much, yeah.
Scott Brennan cannot do that. No.
We can't set you up at like Rutgers and see what happens.
There's a certain control and a respect that guy just has the minute he steps on stage. Look at his special. It wasn't really even comedy. It was more of like a prose speech, if you will, just kind of going through what was going on in his head. I mean, he filmed it a week after the George Floyd incident happened. Mm-hmm. But that scares me, man. I don't know. I don't see regular comedy coming back at least this calendar year.
Well, yeah, I mean, this calendar year is just apt to begin with. I'm not worried about that. I do feel another revolution will come because this is basically like the 50s or 60s where it's like, oh, you can't joke about that. And it gets to the point where they want to basically police it, for lack of a better. I know, granted, it's not policing with actual law, but it's like all to assume it liberals who are like, well, you can't make fun of this, you can't make fun of that, you can't make a joke about that, mm-hmm. where they want to kill it. But in the end, it's like, I can totally see somebody goes, listen, I'm gonna go out there, I'm gonna do it, hate me, scream, get me off this stage, but it's going to keep coming, and there's going to eventually be a revolution. Now, there's going to need some really talented people to do that, because some people think, like, I mean, you know, some of the comedy friends that we have, it's like, oh, if I want to make fun of this or that, I'm going to do it. And they're like, yeah, but you're not talented enough to get past that.
Well, also, there's two things you said there that I agree with. I think the audience is the problem right now, where you have to be a real dirtbag to think that you have the right to go attack a performer on stage. Would that happen if that was a guy playing music you didn't like? Would you go DDT him on the stage? And it is... You know what your right is? Your right is to pick up your chair and go home. That's what your right is.
Yeah.
Your right is to not laugh and say, this guy sucks, and don't laugh at any of his jokes, and go home to your house and go pour yourself a beer and talk about how bad that guy was.
Exactly.
It's really scary when people think that it's okay to jump a comedian off the stage. You know, like, I have no sympathy for this guy. I mean, people said he might have got maced. He might have got punched in the face. Good. You deserved everything that happened to you.
Any other situation where somebody just cold cocks you from behind and puts you in danger, nobody's sitting back going, oh, but, but.
And the other thing is just, it's going to take... the other thing I wanted to talk about, you said there, you got comedians who... Listen, I still have a hard time calling myself a comedian. What I always say is I do stand-up comedy, if you've noticed. I very rarely ever say, I'm a comic. Like, because I always had a hard time saying that. Like, I'm not doing it full-time. I'm not making a living doing it. I would say my hobby or my side hustle is doing comedy. I like to do comedy.
Makes sense.
But I find people, they think that if they... go to a couple of open mics and get booked on a show or two, that they are able to just say the most insensitive things in the world, racist things or whatever, and be like, oh, I'm just it's all right to say it. I'm just being edgy. Like, no, just because you do comedy doesn't mean the thing you said isn't completely ignorant and stupid. And you post it on Facebook and it's not every libtard's fault. Like, they're too sensitive. Now, maybe your joke was really bad. Maybe it wasn't funny at all. Maybe there was no intelligence to it. And that's the thing I find all the time. I can think of three comics in my head right now. They're always putting up like these offensive things or racial things. And they're like, oh, you know, this got taken down from Facebook because people are so soft. Yep. The name. Exactly. No, your joke had no layers to it. It had no finesse. It had no punchline. It wasn't, it didn't come from making fun of like both sides. Like, it wasn't like, I don't know how to explain it, but it wasn't like well thought out. That's the best way to say it.
It wasn't layered. It was something you thought of the shower 2 minutes before you said it and it's a comedian said like live on the, oh, the whole crowd hates me. Ha 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 ha. It's then they're the first ones to go, why ain't I booked?
Yeah. Or it's some stereotype that has been played on for 30 years that people are just like, this is really just not funny, man. Luckily myself, you are two for two with the names you sent me. All my materials is based on like my stories, basically. That's kind of what I guess the comics, you know, my favorite comic is Jim Brewer. He's always been, and I don't know, I guess I always took influence from him because he's like this amazing family guy who does these, he just tells stories and makes these amazing jokes. And I try to like pull from that, I don't try to copy him, but I like that vibe better than trying to be like this offensive, edgy comic, because I'm not an offensive, edgy guy in real life. It's like, you guys want to play these characters, like, you want to play like Bob Levy from 1998 on the Howard Stern show. You want to be, you know, you want to be the Opie and Anthony. Like, That ship is gone, and those guys do it well. Artie Lang isn't stupid. His jokes are funny because he does them well. You know, like, I don't know. It's just, it's a scary time, man, because I don't know where comedy is going to fall. Like, where it's going to fall into, what slot after this all shakes. It's like a Plinko board, you know what I mean? Like, like where is it going to be, and what is, like, I'm on both sides of this, because I think people should say whatever they want, but I think you should also be open to the consequences you get from saying something.
I'm thinking back and all. I mean, I would never want to be jumped, but if there was ever a cool story to add on to the story, when we did our Super Bowl show from Hunkamania, the story ended with, and then one of the male exotic dancers jumped me from behind and crashed me down off the stripper stage, I could live with that.
Listen, I wish I was jumped so my set would end early at the Hunkamania show. That's literally our best story we have, but probably one of the worst times I ever had in comedy before, as far as comedy-wise. And real quick before we get to our guests. So this whole point that I'm getting on kind of revolves around this post I saw this week. Some comic named Victor or something. He posted a picture of him kneeling on a black guy's neck and saying like some awful joke about, I don't even want to like go find it because it was just like, oh, when the white privilege kicks in or something like that. And it's just like, there's an exact example of it. First off, how the hell are you that ignorant to post that and think that you're not going to get outrage when you post that? And people go as far as find your employer and be like, this is the type of person you hire. Like, it is just such blind, dumb. And those people are just like hiding their racism under jokes. Like, they're just like, oh, it's a joke. No, it's not. It's not. It's not, because no one's laughing. No one's laughing.
Yeah, I saw that picture. And, like, the biggest thing I thought of is, like, every comedian I've known has at least attempted a joke when something happens in the world.
Of course.
Where they almost, like 5 minutes later, it's like, ooh, probably should have waited on that or put some more thought into it for layers or whatever. It didn't work out. This, how long ago did that happen? We're talking like a month ago.
Yeah, a little longer than that, but yeah. Not recently. Yeah.
So that's been out there for that long, and somewhere he thought, yeah, now it's going to work.
Mm-hmm.
Now I figured out something. It's like, oh, they didn't see it coming. Look at this.
Look how edgy I am. No, you're not edgy. You're an ignorant jerk off. That's what you are. That's exactly what you are. And that kind of people saying, oh, I'm a comedian, ruins it for the rest of us. It ruins it for like guys who are like trying, you know what I mean? Like guys are trying to be funny and trying to get back on stage and trying to make playful Facebook jokes. It just ruins it. And it's just so like, that's what I say. I don't even call, like when people say, oh, you're a comic, I always say, nah, I mean, I do stand up. I like it. It's like a, or it's like me saying I play guitar in my free time. That's kind of how I want people to see me as a comic at this point in my life. Like, oh, he likes to do this on the side. You know, like I really bothers me, man. It's like, just because you go to a couple of open mics, you're not a comedian, man. You're not.
Yeah, I threw the ball with my wife in the backyard yesterday, so I'm a baseball player.
That's it, exactly. Like, oh, you took a picture on stage with the mic in your hand and you posted it on Facebook. Now you're a comedian. Oh, and now you're sending me requests. Your fan page? No. Like I have so many jokes that I used to say that I just would never say anymore. Like, I don't consider myself this. I don't know. Anyway, it's time to transition here. Time to transition to our guest. You know, that might have put me in a dark mood, Mike, but it didn't put me in a black mood. Mike, who we got?
Tonight we are jamming with the rock band The Black Mood, Scott.
Ooh.
Lead singer Josh Kennedy and drummer Chico Diaz are talking to us about their latest album called Sunshine that came out in May that landed their fourth Billboard Top 30 chart single with the title track Sunshine, as well as their concert benefit music for Rocky Point to provide COVID relief funding for the people of Puerto Penasco, Mexico.
Your Spanish accent is as good as your Russian one.
Puerto Penasco, Mexico.
I'm just going to play a game with you next week where I just give you phrases and tell, and you have to say them in certain accents, and they're all going to be the same. They're all... But yeah, man, let's... I've listened to some Black Moods tunes since we knew we were lining this interview up, and they definitely got a great sound. So without further ado, here's our interview with the Black Moods.
Going on?
Hi, everybody.
Welcome to the Verbal Shenanigans podcast here. I know you guys, you know, you're striving for greatness and trying to make it. You've officially made it, guys. You have officially made it. Once you come on here, it's all downhill after this. So
we have arrived.
you have arrived to the pinnacle that is a weekly podcast. But Chico, Josh, welcome to the show. Thanks for giving us a few minutes here.
Thanks for having me.
Where are you guys at right now?
I am in Fayetteville, Arkansas right now.
Arkansas, okay. And how about you, Chico?
I am in Monette, Missouri. So we're what, like an hour and a half apart, something like that?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And we basically we got to ask every guest that we've had on the last couple months, how is it by you guys? Like, Mike's in Georgia, I'm in New Jersey, so we kind of got a little bit of the whole United States here going on.
Yeah.
How is it by you guys as far as like pandemic-wise, closure-wise, how are you guys doing?
We're good. We've been working on our new record, so
okay.
I just came down here. Had to take my son to the dentist and stuff. So Chico and I and Jordan have been holed up since this thing started.
Where you're like, guys, I want to rock tonight, but you know, the kid's got problems with the incisors. You know, is that what happened?
Rock and roll problems, right here.
Yeah, actually, today's our.
I was going to open for.
What?
I was going to say.
Today I was just going to say. Yeah, go ahead.
I love these things.
Yeah.
You got to love that delay.
Well, we've been working in the studio for the past 6 days straight. So.
Oh, cool.
We kind of have today off. So come do some family time. And.
Now, did you have did you have these songs like ready to go prior to all this? Or were you able to write these things during it?
No, we kind of just started writing. Well, before we went out on the road, we had the ideas worked out for a couple of them. And then Johnny K came in and we wrote one from scratch too with him. So we did two that we would already had ideas for. And then one we just all four wrote together.
Nice.
Yeah. That was also following. We just did a track with Eddie Kramer too, who just produced a song for us, just kind of a one-off to see what it was going to be like to get produced via, you know, Zoom communication.
Yeah.
But it worked, you know.
That's awesome.
So, what's new with you guys?
Oh, nothing. Just doing this a couple times a week and whatnot, but you know, it's kept us occupied, that's for sure. So we basically increased the amount of episodes we've been putting out and got to talk to some really awesome people, so it's been overall it's been good for us.
And you said you guys are where now?
So I'm in New Jersey, Mike's in Georgia.
I'm in Georgia. Yeah.
So
we're pretty spread out.
You guys are really social distancing.
Yeah.
I've been trying to social distance from Mike for a long time. So
We started in the same state, and then about 2 years ago, I came to Georgia. I figure about 2025, I'll be in like Chile, and we'll just keep going, and then I'll circle around, and he'll tell me to go back, and you know, it'll be a cute little thing.
I like it. You're traveling.
So guys, let me. Tell us about like the whole dream of like getting with the band stuff. Like, as I'm reading up, like both of you guys had like the early beginnings of like learning piano and just kind of going through those motions where like one guy was basically slapping your hands and doing the whole J. Jonah Jameson thing. And then the other one was going through an organ player. Just kind of tell us about your progressions and your love of music.
Well, I grew up, my dad is in a band, and it was, there's always music playing around the house. My dad, they were always rehearsing around the house. And I grew up in Southwest Missouri, actually where Chico's at right now.
Okay.
And it was just, they wanted me to play because piano players are always in demand.
Oh, they're the best.
Everybody plays guitar, you know, and they thought they'd put me in piano lessons for, you know, to see if I could dig it. And this was a time whenever I think Roseanne was big. The TV show was happening when I was a little kid.
Right.
Okay.
On Tuesday nights. And that's the night that practice was that I had to go take lessons. And it was this, and so I was just sitting there and the lady was like trying to have me read music. I can barely read, period. So I just wasn't feeling it. And I knew Roseanne was on and my parents and my sister, they're all watching it and I'm missing out. So I pretty much took piano lessons every Tuesday for 2 weeks and then I quit that. And I just kind of came up on guitar. My dad's a drummer, so I got to hang out with his guitar players a lot. And, you know, I just kind of picked it up by osmosis, really, just being around it. And then I played my first gig with him when I was 12 and then went on to find my own band from guys I went to school with and then moved out to Phoenix. And that's where I found Chico.
Yep. How about you, Chico? Were you a musician from childhood or when did you pick it up?
I started playing drums when I was 10.
Okay.
But I wasn't good. And it took me a long time because I was self-taught and, you know, you just learn bad habits and stuff. So time goes on and I'm playing through high school and we actually get to one of the bands I was in, got to a recording studio and I couldn't play to a click. And so it wasn't long thereafter that I left the band. And so so I ended up taking drum lessons and I learned Latin and jazz and funk and all these different things, how to read drum music. And then did that for years. And then actually started teaching myself, which is even more helpful when you're trying to teach it to someone else. But I didn't really play rock music. I was learning all these different things. And that's when I met Josh. And so
yeah, he definitely wasn't playing rock music when we met.
Yeah, way too small.
I don't know what the hell you call it was that he was playing, but it was
it was not rock.
It wasn't even music.
Hey, I'm standing right here. Come on.
Sitting actually.
So our, needless to say, our first auditions sucked. But he had no choice because his other drummer bailed and I had to play the next
one. Didn't have any time, so like, I'm going to the studio tonight. Suck it up, buttercup.
Now,
so
yeah, go ahead.
So that we learned by the School of Hard Knocks on how to be a fusing rock and roll band because it sucked for the first 2 months.
Yeah. But
then, you know, we got it.
Yeah, I know it's very rarely anybody's great. You know, any bands are like, you know, find their niche right away, but luckily, I guess they stuck with you because the music I've listened to sounds great. And let me ask you guys, I'm kind of fascinated. We have a lot of artists on the show, a lot of musicians, a lot of rappers, actors, whatnot. And I'm always fascinated by each individual's writing process. And then also as a band, are you guys like to get in the garage and jam on something and take parts? Or Josh, do you write songs and bring it to the band? Or are you guys a conglomerate of things? What's your process as far as music making? Yeah.
We do all of it like that, you know? A lot of it, because we're together so much, we'll just come from jamming.
Right.
Or, you know, somebody will have he'll have a beat idea or I'll have a riff or just a melody line or Jordan comes up with a lot of cool bass lines and stuff like that. So, and that way it keeps the creativity going and you don't get burnt out of writing just one certain way. You never know how the song is going to be born.
Yeah.
And situation too, Johnny K came in and he had a little guitar riff that he had on his iPhone and he played for us and we liked it. So we just built off of that.
Yeah, so like during all this, like, you know, basically live performing has been pretty much dead for the most part, as far as, you know, maybe get some outdoor gigs here and there. How are you guys, you know, holding up during this as far as, is it just, okay, we might as well use this time to write music and record music, or are you trying to figure out ways to play live?
Yeah, go ahead, Chico.
I was going to say kind of both, you know, because we're in here in the studio and we've been here since June 10th, rebuilt the studio.
Okay. Yeah.
And, you know, making our own demos, making all this ideas and working, and Johnny K came in. But at the same time, we also want to do I think we're doing something on, what is it, August 15th for here in Springfield,
right.
Missouri at Q102. We're going to do a social distancing secret party. There's only X amount of people are going to be allowed. And it's in a parking lot, and we're going to be separated.
They find out a couple days before where it's going to be at or something like that.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Yeah, and we're setting it up, and it's out in the open. And, you know, we're very cognizant of what's going on and want to be safe. But at the same time, we want to make sure that we're still doing what we need to do and people can come and see that because it's needed. It's really needed now. Every day that this keeps going.
What's really impressive about this whole thing that's gone on with the pandemic and people having to be inside and social distancing and with the shows being cut back is how, to me, it's nice to see how important that the arts has came through. People, how much you need it. People want it, you know?
Yeah, one of the things I've been saying the last couple of weeks is like, I think there's going to be just a explosion of good music very soon, like from all these artists, like all these things, and probably a lot of different sounds that bands may not be used to, because a lot of guys are probably writing different things, taking this time to experiment and whatnot. And Chico, you touched on it, like how bad people need art. Like the other day I did organized an outdoor comedy show, and it was like we got like 150 people there, and everybody was like afterwards like, oh my God, thank you. Like we needed to get out and laugh and do something, because everybody's going stir crazy, man.
Yeah. Going crazy, going nuts. It's needed.
Absolutely. Now, when did you guys feel like you're kind of like as a band, you felt that chemistry? Like the one thing I found interesting was your first album was in 2012, but for what I read up, Chico, you were you had a mortgage job and you didn't quit that until 2013. Mm-hmm. So were you still hedging your bets? Is that what you're telling us about the band?
It came to the point, I mean, to answer your first question, the first time I met Josh, I still remember it to this day, because it was a mutual friend that introduced us. He's like, go meet him, give you his CD at the time and learn his stuff and go audition, whatever. And I could tell from right when he came out of Marion's house, his girlfriend at the time, came out and he was like, hey, how you doing? I'm Josh Kennedy. And from there, I was like, yeah, bro. And then, so that's when the chemistry started. And even auditions sucked, but our friendship started, and we grew together.
So Chico was terrible at drums and Josh was a complete cheese ball. Got it. Yeah.
But Chico was good at mortgages. Yeah. So let's give him credit for that.
Yeah. And so years and years later, after doing both and having a child at the time, which was extremely difficult, moving to LA to drive back on the weekends to play the Saturday, rehearse and play the Saturday gig and then drive back and be at work Monday morning, it sucked. I mean, it was terrible. But, you know, you had to do something to keep the machine rolling. And eventually I got to a point where I was like, I got to stop. I got to pick one or the other, because Josh was like, we can't just do this. We're not weekend warriors.
We made that record in 2012. And the Phoenix scene was good and fine, and but you know, you can always sell the same record to the same people once. You got to get out of town, and we're friends with a bunch of musicians back there, and everybody kind of get caught up in the scene, and it's fun to be a big fish in a small pond kind of analogy for a while. You know, we had a blast. We were doing everything that we shouldn't have been, or I guess been in a rock and roll band.
Right.
Having way, way too much fun.
It wasn't so much a business. So that kind of, it switched out at that point, and we were like, well, we got to get out and take this record on the road, and we got to tour and play in other cities if we want it to grow any further than being a local band.
So let me ask you, you know, obviously music now is, you know, predominantly streamed and shared and whatnot, which is, you know, which is fantastic for bands that are up and coming and trying to get their music heard to people and found different ways. But we know ultimately now it's kind of forced bands that, you know, playing music is like the real, you know, live is the real way to make money anymore. And now we're seeing a pause in that. Do you find that like digital music is, I mean, and streaming service and whatnot is helping you guys as far as developing fans and getting your music out there? Or do you find that, you know, it's, you know, it kind of is also sucks because you, you know, album sales are kind of almost a thing of the past in a way.
Well, it's kind of like both, actually. I mean, financially, no, you know, they definitely, when you had to go to the warehouse or whatever, the record store and pay $18.99 for a full record,
yep,
to where now you can just buy one for 99 cents, just a song you want to hear.
Yeah.
Of course you're losing money. So that sucks. But at the same time, there's more avenues for people to discover who you are.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then you start to make those revenues up somewhere else, you know, and then touring stops, but you know,
yeah,
we've been coming up with new merch and being trying to be creative on that end. And, it's actually been working out okay.
I gotta stop. Speaking of merch, do you guys both have custom water bottles right now with your names on them?
Yeah. I'm wearing that.
Wow. All right. Yeah. So,
a friend of ours that does this kind of stuff,
yeah,
she made these, and they're fantastic, man. They'll keep ice for days.
Like, first, I saw Chico raise his gigantic water bottle and says, "Chico," I'm like, all right, that's pretty cool. And then I see you take a sip. Oh, yeah. And yeah, I'm like, wow, these guys are, they're in turn with each other.
Yeah, she put we each got our, like, one of the singles.
That's
that
awesome.
Put out the record on there that she did.
So yeah, that's Jordan's a cool piece of merch.
Jordan's is Belladonna. I don't know if you remember the Belladonna. It's the one that's on the wine. It's she's yellow and got a heart. It looks like that upside down.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
We all got this was our first top 40 single, so we all tattooed it on our bodies.
We went to Vegas and got terrible tattoos.
Well, I'm assuming that was during the way too much fun time you were referring to.
No, that was just like about 3 weeks ago, something like that.
It'd be great if they got drunk and they're like, why'd we put this song on? I hate that song. Why'd we do a B-side?
It's not even our song.
Who let the dogs out?
Oh, that's funny.
So you guys are in the studio. You're making, you know, making new music. You guys have a couple albums. What, like, if people are fans already, what could they expect, like, sound wise? Are we expecting a little bit of the same? Are we experimenting in new ways? And what about people who might be hearing this podcast now, as far as just discovering the Black Moods? What kind of can we expect from the new album?
A little grittier, I think. It's got, it definitely sounds more mature, is what we kind of figured out, because, and by that, it, just the tracks are setting easier, less overdubs.
Yeah.
More like we play when we're on stage.
Nice. Yeah. And the last record, Sunshine, was pretty close to that. But this is, there's just something, it's nice to hear the level of difference that, you know.
Yeah,
there's growth.
Do you guys live track your stuff, or is?
Yeah,
nice.
We'll get a couple drum takes, bass takes. We try to play at the same time if we can, you know. But again, we do it all differently. Sometimes we'll go in and we'll take our demos, and Johnny will cut the demos up, and we'll rearrange them, and then we go through and track to that. You know, it's a very
Yeah,
there's no rule. Which is
it's recording.
Other times we're all in the same room. You know, it's just different time, actually.
With us, because we're staying in our label. The president of our label has a good sized house there in the Ozarks.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, he allowed us to put up, make it our studio for a few months while it's 120 in Phoenix. We don't want to sit there, cook, and our studio back there doesn't have windows. So you're in the dark, you know, it's Vegas. You never know what time it is. You never, you know,
yeah.
You're just in there. And then you come out looking like Howard Hughes by the end of the day.
Now, is that the studio that you built like bedroom lofts in that I read up on?
That's the one in Phoenix. Yeah.
Yeah.
We just, because it's a place where there's different units, and we just took ours. It was 770 square foot. And we, just in case, you know, we're partying too much.
Oh.
We stay there.
Chico is giving us a peek into a drum kit. Is that the studio now?
Yeah. That's cool. The one in the notes. That's the room
we're at right now.
Very nice.
This is the drum room. And we have, this is just
got high ceilings. He's cutting the ceiling off, but yeah, I see. That's kind of the key.
Very cool.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. The room's great.
Like, what'd you guys make, like bunk beds or something like that? Or how'd that work out?
We have a good friend of ours named Gary Brunke. That's a master carpenter. And he comes in. he likes to do what we do. He likes rock and roll music and drinking beer and getting stoned, and that's what he's around the studio and crank records, and he tells us he cuts it so we don't cut our fingers off, and then we hammer and nail and screw it in. Drill into our fingers.
Oh, I can totally understand that. I got a C in woodshop when I was in junior high. The only reason I got a C, I had straight F's. And our teacher cut off his finger during the semester. So by rule, they said, well, you get an A on the final, and that's how I got a C. It just evened out. Hand to God, that is the only way I passed that class.
His hand to God would look a little different.
You want to make it in the world, make sure somebody amputates something. So I was checking out some of you guys' music. I loved the Bad News. I got like a real like late 70s, mid 80s kind of rock and roll vibe there. And I was digging Sunshine with the, I think at the beginning, like the guitar riff, I got like almost like a jazz rhythm to it and all. I'm not sure if you feel that, but I'm just out of curiosity, like how often when you, or do you get like a goal of like, I want to change our sound in some way? Or are you just get in there and you're like just strumming around like, ooh, let's play around with this?
No, it just kind of shows up. I think it's where we are in our career right now, is where we're growing with making records. It's starting to, it just kind of shows itself the direction it's going. Just from how we've all grown as musicians and band members and, you know, people, I think it comes through when we sit down to make a new record. And when we start putting tracks down, it's not like you're overthinking it or anything like that. You refine it and you know how to get what you're looking for quicker.
And also with us, again, always being together, not only having the chemistry musically, but as best friends, is that comes through the music. So it's very easy to take any single one note and it could turn into a whole song.
Right.
And we've done that before. And just one simple beat, boom. It's because we're all very creative and we trust each other. So it becomes, oh, that's cool. That's cool. And if it works, there's no bad ideas, is pretty much what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And they come together as they come together. And we're so lucky to be that way, to be able to write that way.
It might not work right off the bat, but they're always there, and you go back to it. They say, what was that one thing we were working on 6 months ago? Oh, I don't remember. We were drinking Jameson the whole time. Oh, but
then it comes back. You're like, poof, there's a song.
I remember playing in bands for a long time, and that was always a big problem. Like jamming for hours on this song, but as the drinks kept flowing, then you go to jam the next day and nobody remembers a single part of the song. So,
we always have, since we're always in the studio, and our sound guy's always with us. Yeah. Al. So.
There's actually four of us.
Okay.
But he's the behind the scenes guy and he's always got tape running.
Okay.
he smokes a lot of weed. And he's usually pretty sober when it comes to the boozins and we, you know. So there are some definitely funny outtakes by the end of the night. But the music overall, it's usually pretty good. And then sometimes you go in and listen back to the tracks you cut the night before, and you're like, geez. Yeah.
Wait. Yeah. And other times you're like, oh my God, that's the best thing. I have no recollection of that whatsoever. That's amazing.
Yeah. Dude, I know. So tell us about you guys got something coming up on August 20th. You have a concert of some sort, a benefit concert for Music for Rocky Point. Can you guys tell us about that?
Yeah, so we've been playing in Mexico for almost a decade now, and my grandparents used to live there, so I have definitely a part of a home there. And to be able to actually play music there was something that's great for all of us. For one, it's beautiful, and the people, we've just made so many friends there with all the bars and different things that, that's where we started at, really. And so when we were doing that, we can... now they cut the borders down. Tourists can't even go. I mean, they were already in a tough spot in the first place.
Yeah, to a lot of the Phoenicians, you drive 4 hours and you're on just one of the most beautiful beaches.
Yeah, you're in paradise. No. It's literally paradise.
Mexican town, and everybody's super nice, and we know a lot of people there now. So, yeah.
And so they're struggling, and we definitely wanted to help. So we're doing a live stream at a place called 5-0 Studios in Phoenix. And, we're going to do like similar to our CD release party, where everything's going to be, a TV station style. So we're very excited about it. And so we're doing that April 20th, and all proceeds. August 20th, sorry. So all proceeds will go to, it's called musicforrockypoint.com. And that's what we're trying to help. Just people that helped us out in the very beginning, because that's kind of where we started, to be honest.
Sounds great.
That's awesome. Hey, since Jordan couldn't make this podcast, what's the most embarrassing story you would want to hear? Yeah, I mean, if you want to just throw them all out here, I mean, we'll do whatever it takes to embarrass them. Like,
he was in a boy band before he joined us.
No.
Oh, really?
I don't know where that started, actually. Somebody had put that in an article somewhere. We're just messing with him.
What? It was called 97 degrees.
Yeah. Lukewarm. Lukewarm, yeah. Lukewarm. That was his name. So as fans, hear this and whatnot, what can they expect from the Black Moods coming up, and where's the best place for people to go find you, interact with you, listen to your music, and all things Black Moods?
Well, everything comes from our website, so theblackmoods.com. Biggest thing that can help the band and spreading the word is to follow us on Spotify. Follow us on Apple Music, all the majors, Google, Amazon, those numbers matter. Everything. We just had a new website made just about a month ago, so it's looking really good. And it's got all the
website.
No, that's good. You got water bottles. You got a website. It's all coming together, man.
We have our own wine, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's getting ready to come back out again. Yeah.
Yeah, it's out of Phoenix, and you can't ship it until October because it's just too hot and it spoils it. But it's back coming around in the fall, yeah.
So we've got the Belladonna wine and Sunshine, the new wine, coming out to go along with the single. Try to do something like that,
Yeah. That's cool.
Now, do you guys have a vineyard, or you just contract through somebody, or how's that work?
Contract through somebody. It's called Suvino.
Okay.
Out of Scottsdale, Old Town Scottsdale, Arizona.
We were working. We started out with the idea was with another. They just kind of brought it up to us because they were doing band Adelita's Way, did their own. Who else was it? Papa Roach or some of these guys?
They had quite a few. Yeah.
Yeah, they approached us for it, and we thought it was a good idea, and it didn't really work out with that company. So we still liked the idea, so we went and hunted down, a better wine and found it. Because we've been approached about that. A lot of bands have their name shared to like whiskeys and beers. And so we've been approached by both of those too, and just nothing that we liked. And if we're going to put our name on something, I want to drink it.
We get aces. And we like to drink. So, yeah.
Yeah, we're working on our own verbal shenanigans malt liquor, so it's gonna come forward.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I'm getting my own cup. I'm gonna get a Coke can and a magic marker, and I'm gonna put Mike on there, and it's gonna be awesome.
You know what? You should have custom made brown bags too with your logo on it.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. That's nice. Get the 40 market.
Own the 40 market, baby.
Chico, Josh, I want to thank you guys for your time. We wish the best for the band, and hopefully sooner than later you'll be out back on the road with your supporting your new album and whatnot. And keep up the good work. The new single's great, and I think you guys have a great sound, and I think it's definitely a sound that I think a lot of people would dig. So thanks for your time on the show today.
Thank you guys so much. Hope to see you soon. Thanks for taking some time.
All right, Mike the Black Moods. That's a great name for a band. I gotta say, that's a great name for a band.
Yeah, I think that still works in today's age. I'm surprised like nobody else picked it up. It sounds like a 70s kind of band name, you know?
Yeah, I wonder if they compete with the Black Keys and
the Black Crows.
The Black Crows. Mike, when you're in a black mood, how do you get out of it? What gets you out of a black mood?
Usually scratching a dog.
Folks, he's answering honestly. I could vouch for that. Like, you know, like he could be in a piss poor mood coming over my house to do a podcast that we scheduled 4 minutes before. And I'm like, do you want to come over? I guess so. And then as soon as my dog came over, Mike was in a good mood.
Yeah. Yeah. I gotta say, like, one day you put up a video of like Obi getting excited with one of your friends there, and I'm like, that was me. That was my emotion. How dare you, Obi?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. You're two-timer. I don't know how I get out of black moods. I think I gotta like do a project or something like that. Like, I have to be like either creative or like go like paint or build or mow the lawn or something like that. That's how I get out of my black moods, Mike.
I guess like if I'm like really in a bad mood, it's just relaxation. So it's like I'm gonna sit on the bed, I'm gonna turn on the TV, quiet for 1 hour.
Yeah.
Like do not, unless the house is burning down, I do not want to start a conversation.
Well, even that one time when the house was burning down and you were just like, it's my hour, and you just let the house burn down.
Hey, listen, that hour was a great Dukes of Hazzard episode, and I'm not running out of the house just because of a bunch of flames, okay? I'll wait till the credits start rolling, and then I will jump off of the patio and just go yee-haw as I fall 20 feet to my death.
Listen, babe, I know the house is burning down, but the football team's game is on right now. I can't leave.
Hey, not the football team's. Football team.
The one and only.
Yeah, we have been over this. I like teams that don't have an S at the end of it, okay?
Yeah. Anyway, what do you got before we get the hell out of here?
Well, Scotty, as we're getting closer to you becoming a daddy, I figure I'd make up another quiz for you on making sure that you're primed and ready for what's coming ahead for you.
Oh, boy. Okay.
So basically, this here is kind of an average time frame of certain events in a kid's life. I'm just kind of curious if you have an idea of what to expect here.
Okay.
Let me start off with this one. According to parentingscience.com, what is the average age of independent walking for babies in the United States?
Okay.
A, 9 months. B, 12 months, C, 14 months, or D, 16 months.
Now, I know 9 months is a little early, but there are babies that walk. So I'm going to go with 1 year. I'm going to go with the 12-month mark.
Scott, you're on the board. One for one, baby.
Yes, dad of the year, baby. Dad of the year coming.
I mean, I'm not sure you want to be called dad of 2020. let's be honest here. They're going to read it in a different way.
But you know what? If I'm the 2020 dad, that means like I could be average and be the best.
I guess it oddly would work for you in the sense it's like, wow, you shined in that year? Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. According to Healthline.com, the average age of potty training falls somewhere around A, 22 months, B, 25 months, C, 27 months, or D, 30 months.
All right. I think it's between B and C, and that's only 2 months apart. I'm going to go with C, 27 months.
Scotty, you might be a good dad. You're 2 for 2.
Let's go. Yeah. Yeah.
2 for 2 about knowing about number 2.
That's right. That's right. Because I'm a big piece of number 2. So.
All right. According to whattoexpect.com, what is the ideal age kids move out of their cribs and into a bed? Is it A, 24 months, B, 27 months, C, 33 months, or D, 36 months?
Out of the crib and into the bed. Can you read B and C again?
Sure. B is 27 months. C is 33 months.
I'm going to go with C, 33 months.
Ooh, 36 months, Scotty.
Ah, 3 months short. Months. 3 months short. Yep. I knew it was around 3, but I didn't know if like it was a little before 3 you should start getting them in there. So
yep.
I'm not that mad at my answer. I'm not that far off.
Traumatize your kid as it's hanging on to the crib. He's like, no, I got to prove a point to Berlu. 33 all the way.
I was just thinking my kid will be in the bed by like 11 months. 11 months, probably.
That Brenner DNA just knows how to get out of the crib is what you're telling us.
Correct.
It understands the bed settings. Okay. All right. We'll see. Okay. Question number 4. According to healthychildren.com, most children are ready for swim lessons by what age? A, 4, B, 5, C, 6, or D, 7?
5 months.
No, these are years.
Oh.
4 years, 5 years, 6 years, 7 years. You're throwing a 4-month-old into a pool? What the hell?
I've seen Mommy and Me classes where like babies are like, I used to lifeguard to classes where they just bring like newborns in and be with their mom.
Oh, it's fine. Cannonball.
Oh boy. I missed that one. I'll go 4 years. I'll go 4 years.
Redeemed yourself. That is correct.
All right. Like I said, my baby will be swimming by 4 months.
I just imagine your old story on the 4th of July. Your cousin comes in and throws a watermelon in the pool, and you're like, yeah, that's cool. And then you pick up the little one and just chuck him in.
Beat this, baby. Four months. God. Okay. Right. I was thinking of those Mommy and Me classes. I used to have to I had a job where I lifeguarded. I don't know how I did this. When I was a freshman in college, which is, you're thinking, sleeping late, partying all night, I took the 6 a.m. shift at the YMCA up the street and lifeguarded the Mommy and Me class and the aqua size class with the old ladies just like going like side to side in the water.
Clearly, you took it to pick up chicks.
Yeah, well, it worked.
Yeah, man. All right, man. I ain't going out late at night with cologne on. I get up right and early, put on my Speedos, and get to that 6 a.m. YMCA class.
Hey, lady, you ever see the aqua size of me? Anyway.
All right. Next question, Scott. According to an international Santa survey, what is the average age kids find out the truth about Santa?
Ooh, good one.
Just call the truth about Santa.
All right, but before you go, when did you find out?
You know, I don't really know. I don't think I really have a definitive answer. I think just one year I went up to the parents and was like, well, I know it's you, so this is what you better get me. Something to that extent.
I think around third or fourth grade.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any heartfelt story about some bully telling me the truth, and I'm like, no, I know what's real.
Yeah, I think it was around third or fourth grade, and I remember kind of like it, which is weird because like my niece now is right in that third and fourth grade range, and it's like almost depressing to think that she's kind of like she's gonna be done with that like this year probably or next year, you know? It's weird. Yeah.
And then that you pray she doesn't like go up to her little brother and be like, oh, by the way.
Yeah. I remember the years I had my little sister and like knowing and just like having to like play into the act, you know? It's weird. Isn't that a weird thing? Like we just, I don't know. It's like we expose all fake things in society and say, no, you got to tell the truth. But yet like, kid finds out about Santa or you ruin Santa for them. That's like the biggest no ever, you know, like no, it's funny. It's I think it's like, I don't know. Santa's such a wacky story, you know,
yeah.
You know, that we just hold on to.
Like it's going back to like when we found out, I don't know an age, but I do somewhat remember like whenever I was close to figuring out or whatever, like
you had just gotten your driver's license.
But like I remember like like having a weird feeling going be like being in line for Santa, something like that. It's something where I might have known, but it's still not officially known, something like that, where like the parents took it and I'm still like, well, why am I doing this?
He had no pants on. That was another weird feeling. But
yeah.
Wasn't
wearing red, he was just wearing oil all over his body.
He was just your dad's friend, Santa from the bar. Yeah,
they videotaped it too.
All right, but, I'm doing pretty good. What am I, 4 for 5, something like that?
You're 3 for 4 now. But okay. We never answered the question though. According to the International Santa Survey, what is the average age kids find out the truth of Santa? Is it 7 years old, 8 years old, 9 years old, or 10 years old?
I'm going with 8, Mike. I'm going with 8 years old.
Scotty, you're on fire. Correct again.
Yes.
Correct again.
This is how you know I'm going to be a great dad, because my kid's going to find out about Santa at 8 months.
Right after their swimming lesson.
You're out of the pool.
You've been struggling for 4 months, so this is how I'm going to punish you. Guess what?
You can't do the breaststroke and Santa's fake. I can't talk or do anything yet.
I haven't took a first step yet. What the hell? No. You swim, and then you got the power to walk, okay?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Everybody knows that.
Correct.
All right.
God, I'm killing
According
this quiz.
According to moms.com,
that's probably a great website. Range,
yeah, you notice how every one of these is from a different website?
Yes.
Like, not one of them could give me all this information.
No.
But according to moms.com, what age range do most parents have the birds and the bees talk?
Ooh, okay.
Is it A, between 8 and 9 years old, B, 9 to 10 years old, C, 10 to 11, D, 11 to 12?
I'm going to go with D, 11 to 12.
Scott, your child's going to be way off because the answer is 8 to 9.
You sickos. You're sick out there. You're sick. first off, I never got the birds and bees talk, just to let you know. You know, I get the birds and bees talk from their neighborhood kids. That's how I learned everything.
Uh-huh.
Never had the moment like, come here, son, let's talk about that. My dad was at work and he'd come home. The last thing he wanted to do was be like, hey, come here, boy. You know, like you'll figure it out.
It's like, hey, Scott, I just rebuilt a transmission. This is what a woman's vagina is like, okay?
Exactly. No, I never had it. Did you ever have it?
I don't know if I had an official one. I know my dad's had like talks, but like not the official come into the room, let's chat about it. I mean, Dad, Santa's in that room. Yes, we need to talk.
You had it. You guys had it last year at Thanksgiving. Son, I've been holding off this moment for a long time, Mike.
He told me, and I turned to Izzy. I'm like, is that what you've been crying for? Okay.
Damn, all right, 8 or 9. Question. That's early.
Yeah, I was a little surprised by that, but
all right.
That's what moms.com says. You got complaints, go to moms.com.
Moms.com. Anything right, to promote, Berlew? Moms.com.
You have an 8-year-old that has some questions. Go to moms.com.
Sponsor the podcast.
Final question here, Scott. According to BLS.gov, in a 2014 article, what is the average or median age that children move out of the household for the first time?
Yeah, okay.
Is it A, 17? B, 19.
No.
C, 21. D, 23.
Listen.
And Scott, these are years. Don't send your 19-year-old month out of the house, okay?
Wait, I thought I just signed up for the 2-year job and you're out of here, you know? Like, start working, baby.
Babies. I mean, it's like, oh, 2-year plan? Nah. That's what my internet contract is.
Now, I'm trying to think... in more modern times, like kids are at home for a long time now. So my gut answer is 23 because that's probably more accurate. But I don't know if it's like based on older info where I would go at 21. But I'm going to go with my gut and go with 23 years old in the year 2020.
Shockingly, 19.
Get out of here.
I was surprised too.
Yeah, maybe in Georgia. Get out of here, boy.
Boy, couldn't swim in 4 months. He's no use to me. Get out of here.
No, there's no way. There's no way.
Longer than him.
Unless you're talking kids out of the house college wise, there's no way 19. There's no way. I'm calling shenanigans on that. No pun intended.
Really?
No pun intended. I just can't see 19-year-olds all out of the house. Where? In America?
I guess it's basically based on kids going off to like college campuses and stuff like that would bring it down. Like, Lord knows what that number's going to be in 2020.
33.
But,
yeah.
It could be. It's getting later and later. But
well... Here, the questions I got wrong, I felt pretty confident about my answers. Other than me saying I would give my son or daughter swim lessons at 4 months old. But I feel confident with my answer, so I'm not mad at what I got wrong. I fail at these quizzes pretty often. I'm okay with my answers on this one.
Yeah, 5 out of 8, that's a damn good score.
And I mean, 30 years from now, when we do the next one, like, when did your son get out of the house? And I'm like, 42. You know, like, he's still got 12 years to go. I will redeem myself.
Yeah, your kid's like, well, I was born on the same day as Berlew, and Berlew told me I didn't have to move out.
That's not going to happen. But, all right, good times tonight. Good hang. Berlew, anything to promote before we go?
Sure. I'm going to promote a former guest, Kathy Tate, known as the Bald Warrior. She was on episode 287. She has launched a new podcast called The Bald and the Blonde Podcast. Kathy and Daisy Papp's podcast revolves around mindset evolution, and their mission is to help change and evolve as many lives as possible. Kathy and Daisy share tools to overcome challenges and teach skills that can easily be applied immediately to achieve extraordinary results in your life. Check out the Bald and Blonde podcast on your preferred podcast platform.
Awesome. And I will promote, I'm in the similar vein, a former guest of the show. One of my favorites, a runner in the Verbies for me personally. And that is Howard Berger. Howard Berger, makeup artist for The Walking Dead and 900 other things, the Chronicles of Narnia and all that. He has a contest going. I'm not sure if it's still going. That could be late on this. I'm not sure. But either way, check out Howard. He's amazing. He's doing the Mackenzie Westmore Makeup Challenge. The challenge is to create an inhabitant from Narnia. He posted a reference for you along with a photo of the prize. Make sure you send your submissions into Mackenzie no later than Thursday night. And he says, best of luck. So I believe he's doing some kind of thing where he's going to help someone out, almost like an intern who's really into like makeup and special effects. And he talked about that on the cast, how he loves people who are trying to get work that have like a background or are able to show him something or are able to do something. And he showed, and you basically get a big makeup package, like synthetic makeup and all these really high end tools. That's what the winner gets. So, Howard Berger, one of my favorite guests on the show to date, go check him out. And he's at Hoops511 on Instagram.
Yeah, just don't share that with my wife because I believe Disney now owns Avatar, and I could just see me needing to like run a marathon in like all blue makeup.
Well, so he did Narnia. Narnia.
Oh, okay.
But you could still do the blue makeup marathon. I actually will mention this to your wife just so you have to do that. I'm just going to start sending her things that Disney doesn't own and be like, oh, you hear Disney owns the Fraggles? Yeah, you got to – Mike's got to do the Fraggle marathon. He's got to dress like Gimli.
Doozer.
Yeah,
do-
they own Avatar. He should definitely be painting himself blue this weekend on your run. He should definitely be doing that.
At least there's some man all covered in blue running down the trails. I don't think that's right what he's doing. I don't think the makeup's that good because he can't breathe right now.
guys, it was another good hang. Glad to put the episode out. And I want to thank the Black Moods for coming on. Go check out their album. It's a really good album, man. They got a really cool sound. Other than that, guys, what you can do for us is subscribe to the podcast and leave us a review. We have a lot of nice reviews on the podcast. I got to say, we got like almost 70 reviews on the podcast. We'd like to get that to 100. We got some really great feedback on the Byron Belasco episode from Monday, the creator of Kingdom. Great episode. And check us out on all the podcast platforms, iTunes, Stitcher, all those ones. And we're on a bunch of other internet radio programs that we don't have to get into right now. And check out the BS Podcast Network. They've supported us for a long time. So other than that, guys, life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back.
Summer's the perfect time to put your 4-year-old into the ocean.